So according to my calculation, if it is correct, we are observing the 518th appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I believe that's correct. 518. Generally we say this is the year 2004. But for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is not the year 2004. The year 2004 is a Christian calendar. It has to do with the birth of Christ. Lets you in on the world secret, that the whole world is under the influence of Christianity. Even in great India, in Bharat, the land of Krishna and Rama, we're counting our days according to Jesus. So this is the Chaitanya era. The followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begin their date calendar from 518 years ago on this Falgun Purnima. This is also, in Vrindavan, this is known as the Holi. This is the big grand finale of the Day of Holi. So today we'll talk a few things, both formal and informal, because we have a wide expanse of devotees here, from first and second time visitors to people who have spent most of their life here. So we'll talk a few different things. So again, I'll mention to you, this is the Purnima, known as Falgun Purnima. And in Vrindavan, in the land of Krishna, this is celebrated as holy. This is the festival of throwing the colors, etc. This is today, that festival is performed in the morning up till 12 o'clock. And of course it is performed in many places in North India and also in Navadvip Dham. Mahaprabhu's place, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace is called Navadvip Dham. Navadvip means nine islands. In the old days, when there was more water in the rivers, as we were seeing also here, the Kaveri, very less water. Recently in Nepal, we saw some famous Puranic rivers. They were all but a drainage canal, all that was left. Some rivers, like the great Saraswati River of the Rig Veda, is completely gone for thousands of years. We are in now Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, slowly, slowly, things are disappearing. Things are vanishing from this earth. Some people say that every day, two species of living things, maybe it's an insect, maybe it's a plant, or something more significant, but they say that every day, two species of living things disappear from the earth forever. This is the age of Kali. Of course, we don't say correctly forever. Those things will all come again in Satya Yuga, which follows Kali Yuga. That's a long, long time. So in Navadvip, 500 years ago, there were nine islands. Navadvip, dvip means island. Nine islands were there. And these islands were created by the Ganges, the Jalangi, and other tributaries and branches of the Ganges. In that part of the world, the Ganges has hundreds of branches. The first one, as the Ganges comes from the Himalayas, it comes down across northern India through Uttar Pradesh and Bihar and then into Bengal. But at a particular point above Bengal, it starts to branch into many, 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 more and more. And literally it becomes hundreds of branches as it goes towards the Bay of Bengal. The first branch to reach the Bay of Bengal, that's known as the Hooghly. Hooghly Ganga. It flows through modern-day Kolkata under the great Howrah Bridge. It goes down towards this place called Sagar, and it touches the Bay of Bengal first. So from its origin in the Himalayas to its first place where it touches, that is known as the main stream of Ganga. Then later, all those branch, hundreds of branches, slowly, slowly, they all touch the Bay of Bengal. But the first one touches just past Kolkata. And that's the Hooghly. Hooghly. B or G?
G.
Hooghly. Huh? That's the Hooghly. All are considered the Ganga, but the principal flow of the Ganga is there. That principal flow flows through Navadvip. And in those days, Along with the help of some other rivers, the Ganges created 9 islands. But now, if you go there today, you cannot spot 9 islands. I believe there are several islands, a few remain, and everything is much different than it was 500 years ago. Similarly, in Dwarka, in Krishna Lila, you see, you may read about Dwarka. But if you go to Dwarka, you can't find Dwarka, actually. There is a place they call Babe Dwarka. It's an island. But it is not the island which was Krishna's Dwarka. Dwarka was on an island created in the Arabian Sea. Some land came up and Krishna built Dwarka there. Previously, Krishna had resided in several other locations. After leaving Vrindavan and Mathura, he settled in 3 places. Lastly, there was the famous Dwarka, as we know as Dwarka. But he stopped a few other places for some time. But after Krishna's Leela was no more manifest in the world, when his pastimes, Leela, were completed, then one day, that great Dwarka, it also vanished back into the sea. And it disappeared from the eyes of mortal men, of humans. It vanished. So similarly, shortly after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at the conclusion of his Leela pastimes, in his 48th year, then shortly after that, Navadvip, the town or the village, in which he appeared, in which he performed many of his wonderful pastimes, that also disappeared, much like Dwarka. There was a great flood of the Ganges, and when the flood resided, the Ganges had taken a new course, and the Ganges had taken much of the earth, and the town was no more. And shortly following that, that land just became rice fields. And for several hundred years, it was known as the land of Navadvip. A new city of Navadvip developed on the western side of the Ganges. But it is mentioned in several places that Navadvip of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nadia, also it is called Nadia, that was on the eastern side of the Ganges. So in the 1800s, by the 1800s, there were very few real devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only had the land of Nadia, Navadvip, more or less vanished, and the places of Mahaprabhu's actual birthplace, which is called Yogapeeth, and the places where he lived and his associates lived, those places were no more. They could not be seen. They could not be found, you see. Well, not only those physical, so-called physical places disappeared, but also after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the principal teachings of Krishna Bhakti, they also disappeared. They hid in the hearts of a few great souls. And many, we say, rascals, rogues, different types of cheaters, they began to market Krishna Bhakti here and there throughout Bengal, Bihar, in Vrindavan and places. Under the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they began to market Krishna Bhakti. And we say market it because they turned it into a business. They turned it into a maintenance scheme for families, for dynasties, and so many things. They made a business out of it. Generally, people do business because they need money for enjoyment. So they marketed it and turned it into a fanciful enjoying party, not a real Sankirtan party. In various ways they did this. We don't need to go into the details of that. But they did this, and almost completely, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they also disappeared. But as Navadvip was hid under the Ganges, the teachings of Mahaprabhu were hid in the hearts of some of his pure devotees who remained in the world, who continued the parampara in the world, but they were so rare that they couldn't even find each other at times. It was so rare. And the example of this is that when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came to this world. We don't say that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born according to his karma. We have information from the Vedas and Puranas and such references, and from other sampradayas, etc., like Ramanuja Sampradaya, Madhva Sampradaya, that when there is a great necessity of uplifting religion, and Krishna says it himself in Bhagavad Gita, that either the Lord himself comes, means an avatar comes, or a chosen representative comes, and even sometimes both. Sometimes both come, sometimes one or the other. So in every sampradaya, we find that there are personalities which the people of the sampradaya do not consider as mortal men or mortal women. There are personalities there. And they are regarded as divine from not even their birth, from before their birth. They are divine personalities of the spiritual world. And they come at some appropriate time when their work is needed, when their presence is needed. For what? For the benefit of mankind. In Madhva Sampradaya, we find Madhvacharya himself. He's considered to be a dual incarnation of Vayu and Hanuman. These two personalities combined in one. Or, in this way, the potency, the Shakti of Hanuman and the Shakti of Vayu combined in this one personality, which we know currently as Madhvacharya. A great acharya, a great preacher, a great philosopher who stood up against the tidal wave of Mayavad philosophy, which had been terrorizing spiritual culture for many hundreds of years, and literally at a point terrorizing. The Shankarites at a point even had armies. And they would invade all types of ashrams and mutts. And anyone who did not bow to their creed, they would kill them. So they actually became, at a point, terrorists. And even before that, the philosophy of the Mayavadi, it is a type of terrorism, philosophical terrorism. And that led them eventually to physical terrorism. And they terrorized the Vaishnavas to a point that some of the Vaishnavas to exist pretended to be Mayavadis. And they did all only Shiva pujas and things like this. And if they were found worshipping Narayan, they would say, oh, because we want Mukti. We want Mukti. We'll worship Narayan. They even wore the three-line tilak. And they did not show any signs of being a Vaishnava. Now, that wasn't all over India, but that was in places. So this great hour of need, and Krishna sent Madhvacharya. You follow? Before that, there was a similar hour of darkness, and Krishna, Vishnu sent Ramanuja. Ramanuja is considered to be the what?
Shesha,
Anantasesha. Because Anantasesha is a manifestation of Balaram, and Ramanuja is considered Sesha, that means the Shakti, the potency of Seshanaga. Anantasesha appeared as Ramanuja. And also, he was in a time when philosophically Vaishnavism was terrorized. And at a point, even his life was in danger, an attempt to kill him from the Mayavadis. Again, these impersonalist Mayavadis have shown us throughout history the cruel side, philosophically and practically. They were prepared to kill for their spread their doctrine. So naturally, many people fell under the sway of these impersonal doctrines. Sway means they were under the influence. Better that than lose your head, I guess. So when these situations arise, then Krishna sends someone. So he sent Ramanuja. This is before Madhvacharya. And Ramanuja performed many wonderful activities and established Vishnu Bhakti over a great expanse of land in South India, and even traveling sometimes in the north. And he did this all in the face of different types of philosophical and other types of and personal acts of terrorism. So when there is a great need, the Lord sends his representative. So in the north of India, in Bengal, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, things had not deteriorated to acts of physical terrorism, but certainly on a spiritual level, philosophical level, the teaching of Mahaprabhu had been terrorized. And in many ways which the Vaishnavas consider quite disgusting and deplorable and unfortunate. So almost darkness had descended. Shortly after the sun and the moon, there is a verse here in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is nice, in the very beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. The second verse, actually, of Chaitanya Charitamrita. First, Kaviraj Goswami says, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primal Lord himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then, he writes, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and the moon, and they have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Goda. Goda means Bengal, on the banks of the Ganges, Nadia, to dissipate the darkness of ignorance, and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. So this is a poetic inference. The sun and the moon cannot appear simultaneously on the same horizon. One will come, later the other comes. They don't come on the same line in the sky. That physically is impossible. So it's a poetic inference. What is sun? Sun gives light. What is moon? Moon gives light. Both sun and the moon are luminaries, one in the day sky, one in the night sky. But they are luminaries, and both of them dissipate darkness. Do you follow? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu, they are compared to sun and the moon. And they dissipate the darkness of ignorance that has found its seat in everyone's heart here in Kali Yuga. It is unfortunate to have to say it, but even the most educated men and women of our modern times are scarcely better than fools, actually. Even with a series of degrees and initials behind their names, they do not know who they are. They do not know who they are. They think that they are this body, in most cases, which is a combination of muscles and blood and so many things that any item of this body taken alone by itself is disgusting. But, for example, a watch. You have a gold watch, diamond-studded gold watch with a, let's say, lapis or some sort of quartz crystal face and all these things. Each part of that watch has got value. You smash it into pieces, the gold is good, the diamonds are good, the quartz crystal is good. This body, it is only of any use when it's all in one. And any piece of it, throw it. Burn it. Your tooth, your finger, hair, beautiful hair, beautiful hair. After cutting the hair, yeah. Throw it into the waste bin. But when it's all together, oh, I am so beautiful. I am so handsome. We are thinking we are this body. Everyone in this material world is under that basic misconception. Regardless of how great their education in this mundane world is, great scientist, great philosopher, great poet, great musician, great magician, all of them under this basic misconception of life. And if you ask, who are you? They'll just give you a name, which can be found in a phone book. That's all. I am Mr. So-and-so, I am Mrs. So-and-so. They simply give a name. But who they actually are, they don't know. So this is the primal, all-pervading ignorance in this world, what we are. And what we wrongly think we are, everything else goes from there. One domino falls on the left, all dominoes fall after that on this side. One misconception, all misconceptions fall. They work for this body, they only work for society. All things beginning from, I am this body. What is that called? Ahamkara. On the other side is standing a world of knowledge And then after that knowledge acquired, a world of activity unknown to them. What is that knowledge? Aham Brahmasmi. I am spirit soul. I am not this body. That is Vedantic. But Mahaprabhu gave much more clarification. Jiva Swaraboy, Nitya Krishna Das. Not just Aham Brahmasmi. This Aham Brahmasmi of the Vedanta, this is not sufficient, actually. Because this is marginal. That I am just spirit soul, this is marginal. Marginal is a dangerous position. It can come Mayavad side. Again, it can fall back into the material side. There must be a positive knowledge. Jiva Swaraboy Nitya Krishna Das. Mahaprabhu told Nitya Krishna Das. You are the eternal servant of Krishna. Eternal servant of Krishna. Means you always have been, you always will be. You are even now the servant of Krishna, but you are not acting on that knowledge because you don't have that knowledge. This is the primary defect in every civilization, every species of life found anywhere in the universe. People get all excited about UFOs, alien beings, not so much in India. We have other important things to fight about and worry about. But in other countries who have leisure time, they're all excited about alien beings. There are so many abduction theories, abduction cults and movements, people claiming to be abducted by spacecrafts. There are talk, so much talk about UFOs, aliens, alien beings, and all these things. But the primary misconception is the same. If you were ever to meet one of these creatures, well, I don't know what he would look like. Maybe he'd have six eyes, maybe only one eye, maybe no eyes. I don't know. They draw them in different strange ways, make movies about them. But you can rest assured, he or she in that spaceship or whatever doesn't know who he is. Does not know that he is the eternal servant of Krishna. He is thinking, I am this big green body with one big eye. I have come here to eat your planet or whatever. So throughout the world, even the demigods, they have some glimpse. Like early morning, just 6:30, sunlight, but it's not sufficient to read the newspaper, it's not sufficient to do any work. It's some light. So demigods, they have some light. But they are caught up in the world of enjoyment, and the enjoyment is always keeping that as a dim light. They cannot see clearly their position. And demigods are constantly falling into the complications of the material world. They're always fighting to save their position. They sometimes become envious if a human being is performing some yajnas, which will get him elevated to a high position. Indra himself forgets what's his real position. He becomes inimical, and he fights against that person because he fears someone may come and conquer my chair as king of Indra. Fear. Fear is born from forgetfulness of Krishna. He forgets sometimes, even Indra, he forgets. And he becomes fearful of his position. So I have seen sometimes devotees, they forget Krishna also. Even the practicing, neck bead wearing, tilak wearing, japa chanting devotees, sometimes we forget about Krishna and we become fearful of a particular situation, be it physical, financial. We become forgetful and we worry, or we try to do something outside of what Krishna has arranged. And generally that fails. And then we come back to our senses. That, oh, Krishna is our maintainer. Krishna is arranging. What he arranges, we'll accept that and we'll be happy with that and we'll be successful with that. But all so many other types of arrangements may not be favorable for the execution of... Execution, that's not a good word. The performance of pure devotion. Execution means this is what happened hundreds of years ago. People executed pure bhakti. They massacred it. And they replaced it with all types of isms and false conceptions of life. So to come back to the point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in this world back in 1839. I believe it was 1839. We do not say that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born according to his karma. And I was saying that it was so difficult There were so few Vaishnavas, they couldn't find each other. For many years, until his adult life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur could not find a Vaishnava of a similar heart as his own. It was so rare. He could not find any. Everywhere, there was some great deficiency from what is actually the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so, and then, he was so much filled with despair that at a point he prayed very, very sincerely to Lord Jagannath. At that time he was a magistrate in Jagannath Puri. And he was in charge of many of the fairs of Jagannath Temple and the town of Jagannath. He was the district magistrate. In those days, the district magistrate held a very dignified position. Now he holds only a nominal political power position. But in those days, a very high position, speaking in terms of society and the British Raj, and a very dignified position. So Bhaktivinoda held that position as magistrate in Jagannath Puri, one of the principal temple towns in India from ancient times. So at that time he prayed to Lord Jagannath, please send me someone. Please send someone who will help me with my task, with this mission. So he couldn't find anyone. It was such a situation, he couldn't even find the copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But that we reason was for good reasons, because many literatures regarding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had begun to be tampered with. This is the way of the world. Even today, you find people doctoring the books. What do they call? Cooking the books. Huh? Fudging the books in some business. Fudging the books in politics. Writing some false things. All manipulation. This is the land of manipulations and distortions. So many of the literatures regarding Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had also come down to that. People would miss... In those days, there were no printing press. So they would write them again and again by hand. So anybody said, I don't know why he used that word. I like this one. And the little changes began. Not just arbitrary changes. They began to change the meaning of certain things. They began to add certain things to give support to their view of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about. But it appears that Krishna himself, he hid the Chaitanya Charitamrita so this wouldn't happen to it. And Bhaktivinoda, in his time, you would think it's 400 years after Mahaprabhu, it's 350 or so years after Chaitanya Charitamrita is written, you would expect it to be available. He couldn't find it. It took years and years. He finally recovered one handwritten copy. So one day I thought, oh, this must have been a divine arrangement so that Chaitanya Charitamrita would not fall into the wrong hands. The Lord himself had kept it somehow hidden. And when the time was right, one copy came to Bhaktivinoda. One copy, like original quality copy, came to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And today we have the printed version. It's practically in every country of the world. It's in numerous languages, Bengali, English, I think there's Hindi, numerous languages around the world. Chaitanya Charitamrita. But at the time of Bhaktivinoda, can't hardly find a Vaishnava, couldn't find a copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And at that time he prayed for Lord Jagannath to send him someone who can assist in his mission. And shortly after that time, his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, was born there in Puri. And Bhaktivinoda may have not, he did not think maybe immediately, no one knows for sure, whether this son was the answer to his prayer or not. He didn't specify how to send that person. They may come in a chariot, they may come on a horse, they may come as a beggar on my door. He didn't say how. But on the day that when Bhaktisiddhanta was a small child and his mother took him out of the house for the first time, that's a old customary thing, an old samskara, which people used to observe, the child leaving the house for the first time, etc. That just happened to be the Rath Yatra time. And it just so happened to be that Lord Jagannath's cart had broken down, broke a wheel. It was sitting in front of Bhaktivinoda's house on Carr Street in Puri. for 3 days. So then the time came for the mother to perform the ceremony, and so she took the child out of the house for the first time and took the child up on Lord Jagannath's cart. So that was a doubly auspicious moment. And Bhaktivinoda, the story is, he was some other place attending to affairs of Rathiyatra. And the mother placed, of course, she's the magistrate's wife, so she's got access all the way up to the feet of Jagannath. So she laid the baby on the to the feet of Jagannath, and it said that a garland broke from Jagannath's neck and just came tumbling down and poof, landed on the child. So all the priests said, oh, very auspicious, very auspicious. And they kept the garland with the child, and she threw the child away. Later, some people reported to Bhaktivinoda, oh, you were very fortunate, your child is blessed, today Jagannath gave his garland. But when he heard that, then he remembered his prayer. And he connected the two. And then he told his wife, we were told that he told his wife, take a special care, don't neglect. I think that the Lord has sent his servant to help me. Then, the funny thing is, he named this child, which was his seventh or fourth son, I think. Something maybe fourth son. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a large family. He named him Bimal Prasad. Bimal Prasad. So, he didn't name as a Krishna Prasad, as a Chaitanya Prasad. He didn't name as a Jagannath Prasad. He named as Bimal Prasad. So once when I was inquiring about the name, where the name Bimal, then I was told by one sannyasi, older gentleman, he told me, yes, his name was given Bimal Prasad. In Jagannath Temple, there's one Devi Temple. And that is Bimal Devi. Then the gentleman proceeded to say that on such and such a dark moon night, he mentioned one lunar dark moon, Amavasya, one particular Amavasya, that at 12 midnight, when the temple is all locked, these Brahmins, they throw ropes over Jagannath wall and ladders, and they climb the wall, and they go in, and they break the lock on Bimal Devi, and they sacrifice a goat to Bimal Devi. And then later, they distribute that goat in their community. That's Bimal Prasad. And that's all he said. So I was like, oh, interesting. Bhakti Siddhanta is Bimal Prasad. Okay. Maybe, I don't know, I just sort of blocked off the story. And still I was wondering, Bimal Prasad, why Bimal Prasad? Then, it just so happened, a few days later, we went to visit Srila Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj. And we were in his room, and suddenly somebody raised the question about Bhaktisiddhanta's name at birth, Bimal Prasad. So he began to say the same story. He said, in Jagannath Temple, there is a Devi temple that is known as Bimal Devi. So I'm hearing the beginning of the same story. But then he took a turn. He took a turn in a different way. He said, Bimal Devi is the Yoga Maya of Jagannath. Bimal Devi is manifesting all the arrangements for Lord Jagannath's pastimes, Jagannath's Leela. And Bhaktivinoda named Bhaktisiddhanta Bimal Prasad because he will reveal the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. So he took a turn in a different way. Then I felt very good, yes. Now I got the real answer. What is Bimal Prasad? The mercy of Bimal Devi, the internal potency, the Yogamaya potency, who is going to reveal to the world Mahaprabhu's Leela. That would be Bhaktisiddhanta. So Bimal Prasad, not the other side. So that was the very special feature also of associating or having a darshan with Srila Puri Maharaj. You always got the right terms and you came to the most perfect conclusions in the course of it. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then Bhaktisiddhanta was born in 1874. Now, people argue. They say, no, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, by his own admission, he is an ordinary man, you see. He was non-vegetal in a particular lifetime. He had other social habits or something like that, you know. And he was a Mayavadi. He also was a Mayavadi. By his own admission, he's told these things, so you see he's also an ordinary man. But where is there any pure soul, by his own admission, will tell you, oh yes, you see, I'm a pure soul, I've always been pure, I was born pure. If you accept it only by their own admission, they'll all say, I am a fallen soul. I am a rascal number one. I am a fool. And anyone who tells you anything different, know for sure he's a fool. He's a rascal. So it becomes very difficult. You cannot find a real enlightened personality or a real pure devotee or a liberated soul or someone who's descended by asking them. You can't know in that way. About the only one that I can think of was Srila Prabhupada. And I mentioned this more times than one, because he came to a world that said God was dead. That was the propaganda that he met when he came to America. People were saying, God is dead. If there was a God, he died by now. And he'd say, no, he didn't. I have seen him. Otherwise, how do you win the argument? It's just belief. They're asserting he's dead. One spaceman, right, went up to space, and he reported, I went there, I didn't see any God. He said, you don't have the eyes to see. You can't see the back of your own head either. You need help. If you take a mirror, you may see. If you take the help of Guru, you may see. But generally, the Vaishnavas do not reveal themselves boldly like that. That's the nature of a Vaishnava. Hidden type of nature. Not in-your-face type of nature. So people say like that, then he became liberated soul. So there is an argument out there, there is a debate. Was Bhaktivinoda Thakur a liberated soul from his birth? We say that he was, and we have written about that, and we have many things to say. We doesn't just mean me, Vishnu Maharaj, etc., but that means Bhakti Siddhanta and many Vaishnavas since then, including Prabhupada, based on his life, based on his achievements, and based on his writings before he met the infamous Bipin Bihari Goswami, who people say was the source of the enlightenment of Bhaktivinoda. We have things which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has done, said, and written before that. It cannot come from a conditioned soul. They certify his being a liberated soul. And more importantly, that is certified by other great personalities, Paramahansas. But nonetheless, the argument goes on. No one's defeated in this day and age. When Ramanuja was here, he debated with some Jains in this place called Tunanur, about 45 minutes drive from here, and he defeated them. All right? But after he defeated them, they kept on their nonsense. He went to the king and complained and said they should either surrender or cut their heads off. They have been defeated. In the old days, when you were defeated, it's just like in today there's boxing. Right? So two guys fight. One's the previous team. He holds the trophy. Or the cricket team. Okay? Fights Pakistan. Beats Pakistan in the game. And Pakistan takes the cricket trophy and runs out the door with it. Is this allowed? No, the police will catch them. That is criminal. They cannot steal the trophy. They have to surrender the trophy. Run off with it. They'll be dismissed from the league. They'll be arrested for theft. Well, 3,000 years ago, the king would catch a thief and cut his head off. So when you lost the philosophical debate, if you didn't surrender, then you were banished from society. And if you were pushy about it, you may be given the death sentence. What was said and what people said and what people believed was a very big part of society thousands of years ago. Now, two people have a debate, they have an argument, one person is victorious, the other one just goes on talking his nonsense again and again, shows up 2 months later with the same argument. We say, what? This argument already been dealt with for 100 years. It has been defeated 25 or 30 times. And again, the same argument. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. They go on like this. But about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, you can scrape the pages of history, you cannot find any small thing in one day of his life that indicates that maybe he's not a pure soul from birth. It is said that even the umbilical cord, which connects the baby to the mother when he was born, was wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin's thread. And his father said, just see, born Brahmin. Even from there, where we wouldn't suspect anything, there was some sign. Then, the first food and only food, the first food he ate was Jagannath Mahaparamana, sweet rice. He got the garland of Jagannath. One day, then someone says, ah! But one day he ate a mango. He ate a mango when he was 3 years old that was not offered to Krishna. Ha! Just see, he's an ordinary soul. Huh? We say, yes. And on that day, when he was 3 years old, when his father told him, oh, you ate the mango not offered to Krishna, that is the bhog. You took the bhog, that is offense. He swore, oh, I am an offender, and I will never eat mango my life. You cannot even remember when you were 3 years old. Who can remember what you said and did when you're 3 years old? Maybe if you're 5 years old, yes. But by the time you're 10 years old, 15 years old, you can't remember when you were 3 years old. You can't even remember. Not only could he remember, he kept the vow his whole life. And he lived to be almost 70 years old, 64, 65 years old. His whole life, from the time he was 3 years old, he never touched a mango again. And he would sometimes be offered mangoes when he was a great acharya. If he would give so many fruits, he'd say, no, I'm sorry, I am an offender. I cannot take mangoes. So, the whole story, they went, no ordinary person can do like that. At the age of 3, take a vow never to take mangoes again. Generally, a child can just do and say anything, and within next mango season, he'll be eating. Children get boils. They cry. They get some big boil from eating too many mangoes. Then they never want, I don't want any mangoes. Next year, don't you remember those boils? What boils? They go for the night. They're led by the senses. Not Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Then when he was 6 years old, he had a greater command of the slokas of Bhagavad Gita than anybody in this room. When he was 6 years, 6, 7 years old. A great command. And he was helping to edit his father's journals when he was 7, 8, 9, like this. Nothing about his life shows to be mundane, actually. So both Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in our parampara, they are accepted as liberated souls who appeared in this world. Just as Ramanuja is the Ramanuja line and Madhva line. And I believe since Ramanuja and Madhva, there have been other great personalities also who have come in their lines. Maya has her line of thought. Maya has her line of agents. The Supreme Lord also has his agents. He has his line that is known as Parampara. So, it was the first and primary work of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta to rediscover the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Along with their many writings and their poetries and their preaching and their Sankirtan, it was their principal work. A work that nowadays is sometimes given second booking, as we say. Second, as kind of rated second class. Maintaining the Holy Dham. Maintaining the Holy Dham. Discovering the Holy Dham. It just so happens if people live in Vrindavan or live in Mayapur, they are often second-rated to people who are preaching outside in the world. But actually, that was the primary work of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, to reestablish the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, and along with that birthplace, the places of his pastimes, to again manifest the eternal abode of Navadvipa for the benefit of the world. And primarily they did this based on a statement by Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. He once, or maybe more than once, but it's recorded once, he made a statement that says, there will be a wonderful temple built at the site of Sri Chaitanya's birth. And from this temple, the Sankirtan and the holy name will spread all over the world.